and welcome to Fueling Around with me, Jason Plato, and my co-pilot and navigator, Dave Vitti.
Hello.
Fueling Around is powered by Adrian Flux. As the UK's largest specialist insurance broker, Adrian Flux will tailor a quote to your exact needs and help save you money on your car, your bike, or your home insurance. So then, Dave, how are you, mate?
I'm warm currently. At the time of recording, it's the hottest day of the year, I think, Mr. Plato, and it is about 32 degrees where I am, so it's, it's warm.
Yeah, I'm a bit toasty here, 33 here, but I've been in the car all day because I've been able to get my mum and dad. Am I allowed to do that now? Who knows? So I've been in aircon since 9:30. Anyway, who have we got today, do you reckon? Is he a cool dude?
He's a very cool dude, I would say. I mean, you know, perhaps not as cool as you and myself, Jason, but certainly in the top five of cool. Yeah, obs.
Anyway, our guest today is a gentleman who's, quite frankly, living the dream. His life involves jetting around the world from one glamorous location to another, watching Formula One, wearing chinos, and obviously sipping martinis. It's all in a day's work. For the one and only, oh my God, Steve Jones is in the room. Hello, mate, how are you?
I'm very, very well. How are you doing, guys?
Yeah, good. We're good. Good. Have you enjoyed the lockdown thing?
Yeah, I mean, it's a bit of a strange one, isn't it? Because I want to say yes, but at the same time, I have to keep in mind that it's been a living hell for a lot of people. So what I will say is that myself and my wife, we made the best of it. You know, we've been eating well and we've been drinking very well as well. I mean, it's nuts, isn't it?
Are you embarrassed when you take the wheelie bin out?
The clear plastic bags full of bottles and cans. And it's embarrassing. Yeah, but you know, what are you going to do? You're going to fill the time with something.
We had a situation last week where the bin men refused to take our recycling bin because it was so overflowed. Because the lid wasn't even close to shutting because there was that much stuff in there, they actually put a note on there and they refused to take it, which is the worst shame that you can ever have in your street. Because then anybody going past has sees all the other blue bins are all emptied except for our one, which has got this massive, massive lid and a warning sticker on there.
Oh, you had a proper sticker on there?
Dissed.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. We failed. So, Steve, listen, back to the world of the day job. So at the moment, we are, at the time of recording, just about to start the first 8 races of the 2020 calendar. What does that mean for you? Are you going to be travelling? Are you doing it remotely? How does it work?
We're not travelling. We've decided to stay here in Britain. It's an option that we've all signed off on. We think it's the right thing to do at the moment. So we're going to be filming our show from a yet-to-be-disclosed location here.
Oh, I'm glad you did that, because I was about to tell the world where it is, because obviously I know, but I won't.
I don't actually know if it's out there or not, so I best not say it. I've got a way of shooting my mouth off occasionally, and I get in trouble, so I'm not going to say, but it's going to be cool.
Yeah.
And all the gang's going to be there. You know, DC is going to be there, Mark Webber, Lee McKenzie, Ben Edwards, you know, Billy Munger's coming back. So it'll be the team, we'll be anchored here in Britain. But we're still going to bring you all the action. So don't go worrying about that. We won't be in the paddock, but we will still be, you know, giving you all the stuff that you've missed and loved so much over the last 3 months or so.
So tell me, because obviously I'm familiar with your career in the early days with presenting. Where did this Formula One gig appear from? How did that? I mean, did you go after it? Have you always been in love with Formula One? Tell us some more.
I mean, I was aware of Formula One. My grandfather was a huge fan. It was always on the box when I was a kid. So I was definitely aware of it. I remember thinking, well, those guys are nuts. Look how fast they're going. But I wasn't like a diehard fan. If it was on, if I'm in the house and there's guys traveling around a circuit at 220 miles an hour, yeah, I'm going to look at that. But I wasn't a diehard fan, and I never had any expectation that I would become a Formula One presenter or a sports presenter. You know, I'm essentially an entertainment presenter. That's where I started. And this phone call in early 2016 just came out of the blue, and it was the then head of Channel 4, Jay Hunt, and she rang me and said, you're into Formula One, yes? And of course, yes, huge fan. I love it. And she was like, okay, good, that's good to know. I'll get back to you. And that was it, just a short conversation. What the hell was that about? Weird. And about a week later, she called me in and said, we're going to have Formula One on Channel 4 and I want you to be the host, which blew my mind.
Wow, how cool.
I did not think, wow, how cool. I thought.
Did you not?
No, I thought you got the wrong guy. What do you mean? I'm not a sports presenter. I don't know anything beyond, you know, a Formula One is cars on a circuit racing one another. I didn't know anything about it. You know, I didn't know what DRS meant. I didn't know all the names of the drivers. So I just, you know, I showed her the whites of my eyes, and I was pretty much telling her, I don't know if I can do that. That's beyond what I think I'm capable of. And she was like, I disagree. I think you can do it. I'm like, okay. It's pretty scary, Jahan. If she tells you something, you listen.
Yeah, I've heard that.
And I kind of thought, well, okay, I'll have a look at some races, and I'll let it seep in, and I'll see if I can, you know, get to a point where I'm comfortable. And she was like, no, I'm telling you, you're going to be doing it. So go away, learn it, and then come back in March. You're going to be hosting Formula One. So, okay. So I went home, and I watched the entirety of the 2015 season, every qualifying session, every race, every free practice session. I just let it wash over me and absorb it. You know, I was dreaming Formula One eventually. That's all I did. Jason, you know the deal. No one person can know everything about Formula One. It's super complicated. There's lots going on. And that's kind of my mantra. I know quite a bit. I know more than the average Joe, but it's still an ever-learning process. You're always learning. It's so tough. It's so exciting. And I feel like people are more passionate about this than anything I've ever done. Mm-hmm. So I've always, I feel very lucky to be part of it. And I did not think that I would end up being a sports presenter, but here I am. And thank you, Jay Hunt, very, very much.
How cool is that? What a great story, eh?
And so do you find then that you sort of structure your work so that you can kind of lean more on the likes of DC and other people as and when you need it? Does it work like that? Do you kind of like carve up the stuff?
Yeah, I mean, initially that's how it worked. I leaned on my producers and directors, and of course DC and Ben Edwards is kind of my oracle. You know, I said earlier that no one person can know everything. Ben Edwards, our commentator, is probably the exception to the rule. He does know everything, but that's Ben, especially. He's a one-off. But that first year, of course, I leaned so heavily on my team, on Whisper, the production company who make our coverage. And, you know, and they guided me. They put me under their wing. Our series editor at the time, a guy called Mark Wilkin, he worked very closely with me. And I learned my craft, you know. And now I don't lean so much because I've been doing it for 4 years. I'm heading into my fifth season, and now I have ideas. I write the show. All the stuff that you see on screen is me. I've written all that. I come up with the questions. In fact, if I'm completely honest, now I'll turn to DC and say, don't ask that question. Ask this one. It's more hard. he's got a tendency to sit on the fence. I'm like, come on now. Ask this question. He's like, no, you can ask that. I can't ask that. I'm tied in. I've got sponsorship to the people. Get off the fence.
Yeah, I've got one of my 3,000 irons in all those fires. Just give me a break here.
Jason knows.
It looks like you genuinely have a real laugh, though. And that's why it's nice to watch. You know, as a team, when you're presenting it, it looks like you genuinely enjoy each other's company and you have a laugh on and off screen. And I would imagine that must be the case because you can't fake that kind of chemistry.
Absolutely. You've hit the nail on the head. We do all really enjoy each other's company. We love what we do, and we spend a lot of time together off camera. I mean, you can't not with the nature of the job. You know, I'm away for 2 weeks at a time. I've got my core team, and that's one of the things I've always loved about TV. You meet people, 2 weeks later you're on a tour somewhere filming something. You feel like you've known this person forever. You know, so you're in this vacuum together, and it's a great thing. I've made so many great friends through TV, and I classify DC and Ben and Mark within that group, you know, and Lee McKenzie, we're a very close team, and I like that, and I think it comes across on screen. You know, occasionally, I know my style is a little bit different to the norm, and I like to have a laugh, because there's a lot of humour in motor racing, of course there is, but when things need to be serious, then I'm serious. I try to toe the line, but that's just kind of my style. I just like having fun, and Jason, you know, motorsport, it's a very funny sport. There's loads of just hilarious stuff that goes on, and I have to talk about it. I can't look away from it. Be serious when you need to be, but also have fun when it's just there in front of your face, and it happens so often.
Yeah, well, I think that's what's good about the coverage, actually, is that you do delve into some stuff which actually ordinarily wouldn't make the cut because it's not F1-y, and it's nice to get some different sort of stories in there and a bit of underground filth, and because there's plenty of that going on.
Of course, yeah, it's a crowded market, and you've got to have like a USP, and that's our USP. We truly hope that anybody who watches our coverage thinks, you know what, I could probably, I know it's a cliche to say, but I could probably go and have a pint with these people at the pub. And I get that a lot. When people meet us, they seem to have smiles on their faces, like, oh, hey. And that always makes me really, really happy, because we do the show for them. And it is hard. It is a slog. You know, Jason introduced me earlier, and he's right. Formula One is very glamorous. If you're David Coulthard or Mark Webber. if you're Steve Jones' TV presenter, and you're, you know, about to put on your Formula One gear, you put on your jacket and your trousers or whatever, and you're in a porter cabin getting undressed in front of your 15, you know, colleagues and friends in a boiling hot porter cabin in the middle of Bahrain. That ain't glamour at all.
Yeah.
You know, it's not glamorous. It's a hard slog, but we just enjoy the subject matter. I love watching the races. I love seeing those cars go on the track.
Have you ever managed to get yourself out in a car with a driver, whether it be one of the Merc, you know, ride cars or a two-seater car? Has that ever happened?
Well, one of the first things we tried to do in 2016 was put me in the two-seater in Australia. They famously have a two-seater. They take around the track there in Albert Park. And DC was like, I'm going to drive this guy around the track in a two-seater F1 car. And I got into this car and I just couldn't fit. My shoulders wouldn't get in there. And you know, what's the name of the air vent behind you?
The air box.
My head was literally resting in that. I thought, this ain't going to work. So that this guy's not going to fit. So unfortunately, fortunately, because it would have been DC driving, I've never been able to go around there in, you know, a Formula One car, which is a bit of a shame. I've driven a simulator and I've been around a lot of the tracks in the safety cars. DC took me around Spa a couple of years back, which is just mind-blowing. Max Verstappen drove me recently in an Aston Martin around, I think it might have been Montreal last year. So I get to have drive-alongs with the drivers occasionally and have a chat with them. It's just amazing. It's terrifying. You know, the speeds, you boys go, Jason, it just defies logic. Essentially, I have a part of my brain that is missing in your brain.
It's called the amygdala. I've got a bit of an amygdala, but all the lads that do the Isle of Man TT, they are definitely missing theirs.
Oh, yeah, 100%. Yeah. What is wrong with those guys? I mean, it's just...
off their rockers.
I have so much respect for them to put your life on the line like that, because every time they get on a bike, every time one of those boys gets in the cockpit in a Formula One car, you know, a touring car, wherever you're driving at those speeds, you're putting your life on the line. It is berserk. And they do it because there's great riches to be found there and fame and all the rest of it. But they also do it to entertain us. So I've got all the time in the world for anybody who gets in a machine and drives that quickly. Mm. It's very, very impressive.
Steve, can you remember the cars of your, you know, your childhood? So what were you being ferried around in? Was it Cortinas or Cavaliers or Vauxhall Vivas or what was it?
All of the above. My father was a proper car guy. He liked to think of himself as a bit of a rallier, because I'm from the Welsh Valleys.
Really?
I could detect a slight Welsh lilt in there somewhere.
You see those two houses up on the hill there? Mine's the middle one, it is.
That's not bad. That's not bad. Don't do that in Wales. They won't like that.
Nice coat, that jacket.
But my father used to like rally around the woods. Everybody did. You go up into the woods and you'd rally a car around there because it's part of the World Rally Stage. So everybody's up in the woods. So my father would total all these cars. His favourite car was, have you heard a thing called a Droop Snoot?
Yes.
Are you familiar with this car?
Yeah, the Vauxhall.
Yeah, the Vauxhall Droop Snoot. I think it was the fastest road car, or at least he had it tweaked to the point where it was the fastest road car available at that time. It's an extraordinary looking car. Anybody who's listening to this, I recommend you Google that car, take a look. But he totaled that. My father rolled that and wiped out the Droop Snoot. And then I think he went on. He had an Alfa Romeo. He's one of those guys who believes everybody should have an Alfa Romeo at some point.
Yeah.
He had some souped up Nissan. Remember that weird car in the 80s? It had about 50 names. It was like the Nissan Datsun Cherry Europa or something like that. he had one of those things. He had the most grown-up car I remember him having was a Triumph Acclaim. I mean, you know, he was getting a bit older. He's like, I need to calm down a bit and get a proper car. And then I drove that into a lamppost.
Best thing for it, to be honest.
Yeah.
I mean, That was affectionately known in the trade as a right snotter.
It was green as well. It was a green car, green Triumph Acclaim. And my brother was trying to teach me how to drive. I was only about 15. And I lost control on an industrial estate, drove straight into a lamppost. So after I crashed the Triumph, which I was learning to drive in, and my father got me a little brown Mini.
Nice.
And it was a wonderful little car. I remember the gears were an absolute nightmare on it. They were so close together. It was very confusing, and I didn't like it at first because I was so low to the ground as well. It felt a little bit scary. It felt like, well, exactly what it was, just going around in a little tin can. My father was like, oh, if you learn to drive in this, you can drive anything. So I did. I learned to drive in a little brown Mini around the hills in the valleys there, which, again, if you can drive around the Welsh valleys, you can drive anywhere. You know, forget about London. Forget about that. I mean, some of the vertical, like, mountains you have to climb, you know, doing three-point turns on a pretty much like, you know, a 45-degree angle, it's pretty scary. So I learned in that little car. And then I thought, right, I'm going to drive. But instead of driving, I decided to go traveling. So by about the age of 20, I went traveling around the world. And then I didn't think about driving again. And I didn't actually get a car until I was 27.
Wow.
And was that because you were living in central London? You just didn't need one?
Bingo. Exactly that. I was living in central London after I got back from traveling. I moved to London. And it just didn't make any sense to have a car to drive around the smoke. Because obviously with the tube system, it'd just be an inconvenience having a car. But it got to a point where I just wasn't enjoying traveling back and forth to Wales on that train. I just wanted to have a bit of me time on the M4. So I decided to buy a little runabout. So I got a brand new Renault 182 Sport. Remember that car?
Mate, great car. Great car.
Such fun. It was a fun little car. It looked great. It was gunmetal grey. And I just fell in love with our little car. And it was comfortable enough to drive back and forth to Wales. And nippy enough to drive around London. And when you don't have a car, you think it's absurd to have a car and drive around London. Why would anybody do that? But as soon as you have a car and that freedom, and just, I don't know, just it's just super cool driving through Piccadilly Circus, you know, to be driving along Charing Cross Road. So I ended up driving around London all the time. You know, and I still do it to this day. If I go up there, I'm like, oh, I'll go a little cruise along Piccadilly there, you know, a little cruise past Buckingham Palace. And I just love it. So I fell in love with that car, but it got to a point where it wasn't fast enough. So a couple of years later, I decided to upgrade and I got a Renault V6, also a gunmetal grey.
The Clio V6.
The 3-litre Clio.
Wicked.
With the huge great hips on it.
Yeah. Proper thing.
You got it. Yeah.
Yeah.
The engine in the back, two seats up front. I mean, that thing was awesome. I loved that car.
Mate, you're the first person I've ever spoken to that's owned one of those. Such a rare thing. Epic.
Well, this is the thing. I'm so angry that I eventually got rid of it. Essentially, I got rid of it because it was such an outrageous looking car. And I remember driving through London. I can't remember exactly where, but there were a couple of guys on the side of the road just chatting, and they both looked up at me in this silver, crazy-looking car, and they just burst into tears of laughter. They were just laughing at me in this absurd car. And I, at that point, I thought, I should probably get something a bit more grown up. I really should. So I got rid of that car out of embarrassment because it was such a boy racer car, and I regret it to this day. I was in London not so long back, and I saw a V6. And ended up like stalking this person. I was just driving around behind it going, God, it still looks good. Why did I get rid of this bloody car?
Probably worth a few bob now.
I would have thought so. I mean, at the time, I think you could pick one up for, what was it, like 20, 24 grand? Maybe less than that, actually, maybe about 20 grand. So, I it's probably worth a bob or two. But I decided to grow up and I still have the car that I replaced that V6 with. To this day.
Don't tell us, because I think this is a good game, Jason, right?
What is it? Yeah.
You and I have both got to work out.
Or do we get a multiple choice?
Yeah, that's a good idea. Give us a multiple choice of four.
Four cars, okay. Aston Martin.
Yeah.
Range Rover Sport.
Yeah.
Prius.
Yeah.
It's definitely not that.
Well, am I playing with you? And a motorbike.
What are you going for, Dave? Go on.
Without the options, I was going to say that I could see Steve in either an Aston or a Jag. So I think I'm going to go for the Aston.
See, I was thinking a BMW, like a sporty saloon, maybe like an M5. That was what was running through my mind. So actually, do you know what? I'm going to go for the rangy sport because that's quite sensible. And I think you said you wanted something sensible. I hope to God it's not the Prius.
But before we get the answer, then I have another theory behind this, because I think that actually if you had a Range Rover Sport a long time ago, I think that he would have upgraded it by now. So therefore, I think that maybe it's the Aston, because if you have an Aston and you have a good one, you're not going to want to part with it.
Yeah, you could be some sort of psychologist with that sort of... Yeah.
Sound logic.
Right. Reveal.
The reveal is... What I do drive and what I have driven since 2006, and it's just coming up to 100,000 miles, is a Range Rover Sport Supercharged. Ah.
Mate, sensible? Sensible? Did you say supercharged?
Yeah, it's supercharged. I mean, it looks more sensible than the absurd V6, I suppose. But, you know, I've got the black wheels on it, which, by the way, I was the first to do. I was the first to put black rims on a Range Rover. I see it all the time, everywhere. I did that first, 2006. And the reason, because you're right, Dave, I thought so many times I should upgrade this car because I do love a Range Rover. Super comfortable, nice and powerful, you know, great for going back and forth to Wales. But every time I came to get a new one, I just thought, well, what is the point? This, you know, this 14-year-old car, it's never broken down. It's run like a dream, and I just feel like I would be doing a disservice or cheating on it somehow by getting a new one, because the car would just say, well, why? What have I done to deserve this? Have I not served you? And I've literally driven this car all over Europe. Myself and my wife, we like to go on driving holidays. So I've literally driven from here to Croatia in this car. I mean, rock solid, never goes wrong. I've been over the Alps twice in this thing in the same day. I drove over the Alps and then I drove in the underpass and went over again because it was just so sweet. So I've just stuck with this car and I continue to love it, even though currently it's a bit of a shame because it's 32 degrees. The air conditioning unit is broken. I went in for a new one. So it is like basically stepping into fire at the moment getting in this black Range Rover. But I just love it, and I can't get rid of it. It's immaculate. I absolutely adore this car. It's there's not a scratch on it, you know? One of my pet hates, and it's one of my wife's pet hates as well for a different reason, because she just finds it annoying. If we're walking along and there's a car there with black rims or scratches, first thing, I'm like, they don't deserve to have black rims. If you know, if you can't keep them unscratched, then don't have them. And Felicia's like, yeah, Steve, you say this every time. I get it. Like, no, you shouldn't have them if you can't look after them. Simple as that. So you won't find any scratches on my rims.
I had all four of my wheels refurbed recently at the cost of about £50 a wheel. And this really good place. And they get sent off and they all get completely, you know, sort of re-powder coated and everything. They come back immaculate. And I've had these four absolutely immaculate wheels because I, like you, Steve, it's a real sort of bugbear of mine. And when I see nice cars with the wheels all completely chewed up, I don't understand it. And then the other day, I took a chunk out of the back left one. And I was reversing, and what I thought was a straight pavement actually had a bend in it. And so I thought I was coming in a straight line, and it kinked round, and it just caught the corner.
Mate, how bad is that noise?
It makes you feel sick.
What, day ruined? That's the day ruined. There's no coming back from that.
Horrible, horrible, horrible thing. And then I just think, God, why did I do that? If only I hadn't reversed there, I'd still have four perfect wheels.
If only, Dave, if only.
As part of my amateur psychology as well, Steve Jones, because I think I'm getting a picture of you in terms of your motoring personality, I would imagine that your cars are immaculately tidy inside. I would imagine that you're not the sort of man who has things rolling around in the back or packets of crisps in the footwell. I would imagine that there's immaculate, almost to the point where, a little like me, I like to have the air vents all on the same kind of angle.
And stop
also
it.
And also
stop it.
I can't have, you know, when you have the two different temperature settings for sort of left and right,
yeah,
they have to be the same. I can't deal with getting in a car where one's 21 and the other's 19 and a half. That'll ruin my day.
Dave, it's like looking in a mirror.
I wish.
Everything you just said yes to that. I'm so bad. Do you know the volume on the radio?
Yeah.
It can't be odd. I don't like 17. What? I'll go 16 or 18, but I'm not good. 17, no. That's odd. It doesn't feel right.
What about if 17 is perfect for the volume, though?
Jason, it can't be perfect because it's 17. if it's perfect, then it's 16 or 18. It can't be 17. No. I'm a big believer. My wife's different. My wife is a free spirit. She's loosey-goosey. She'll just take off her socks, chuck them on the floor, whatever. It's fine. I'm the exact opposite. And she's, oh, God, you're getting obsessive over this car. You got your little vacuum cleaner out there cleaning up the footwell. I'm like, why is it when you want something to be perfect and beautiful that it's obsessive and weird? She's like, oh, perfectly normal throwing her dirty socks on the floor. But I'm weird for wanting a clean car. What is that? I don't get it.
Does your wife drive the car?
She does. She's just learned to... She's American. She's just learned to drive over here. So she does drive it, which is exactly why we've had a couple of the rims fixed recently. She's going to slit my throat for saying that. But yeah, so there is that. She does take it out. I mean, listen, I love this car, but I love my wife even more. So she can drive it.
It sounds like it's close, though.
It's a toss up sometimes. It's about 51-49, you know.
You can never get in trouble with the car, though, can you? You can never be in the bad books of the car.
No, that's true. The car doesn't judge. The car doesn't judge. It's always there for you. It always delivers. But it was looming because my wife is American. She moved here with me about 7 years ago. I'd always driven, and she didn't have a driver's license here, but she was, oh, I'm going to make sure I do it. I'm going to get it. And I'm like, oh yeah, well, you know, when you're ready, thinking it never happened, it did happen. And now she drives the car around, but she's a good driver. She's very good. But
I just love the way you said that with such vigor and it's she's a good driver. Yeah, you're in such trouble.
I like things to be just right. I don't see how that's an issue.
A clean car is a happy car.
Okay. And do you know what? I firmly believe this. I firmly believe it. A clean car, we all know it, drives better somehow. What is that? A polished, clean car drives better. I don't know what it is. It just feels like everything is working in perfect harmony when the car's clean.
See, do you know, I'm a bit the other way. I quite like having a dirty, like a 911, like a proper 911, and it's just looking a bit dirty outside. Oh, I quite like that.
I mean, if it's like, you know, mud splatters going up the wheel arches, I mean, that's kind of cool. But if it's like just dirty from smog and someone's etched like a cartoon dick into the
that'll be me doing it to myself.
that's a bit much.
You see, I can tolerate a dirty outside of a car more than I can tolerate a dirty inside. Like, my car will be quite dirty and doesn't get washed very often because it hammers up and down motorways, and I kind of get to the point where, it's, you know, there's no point. But inside, I had to take my mum's car to the garage the other day for it. It needed to go in for a repair. And so I picked it up from hers, and I'm driving down the road, and I've been in the car for about 30 seconds. And I'm like, what is that noise? And she had a can of de-icer in the boot that was just rolling around, right? Now, this will have just been rolling around for about the last 6 months.
Yeah, since winter.
Since winter, absolutely. And I'm thinking, how can you do that? Because within 30 seconds, I'm so irritated that I've had to pull the car over in the middle of the road, get out, open the boot, and go and put it in the little, you know, the little pockety bit in the back.
Yeah, you got that little mesh thing. What did she say when you said, how can you do that?
Just doesn't bother her. She's just got all sorts of crap just rolling around in the back.
Is that your mum?
That's my mum, yeah.
See, I've got a theory on this. I think it's an aged kind of don't hear things, because my mum recently couldn't get off a chair, walk out the room and fart. And she doesn't even know she's done it. And I think it's she used to disguise them years ago with like a badly timed cough. Now, nothing. Not even a cough, no knowledge. She goes, mum, with you. No, I never did. So I think it's a hearing thing.
This is off the subject of motoring slightly, but bear with me because I think we might be on some common ground here. And I have actually looked into this before, and I've had this sort of verified, is that I have a theory whereby women, in general, cannot tell the difference between HDTV and normal definition.
Whoa. I mean, I don't know what, I don't know if I want to get involved in this. I'm stepping back.
Because my missus will stick EastEnders on 101, right? And I'm like, what are you doing? Stick it on 115. It's HD. Yeah. She goes, you can't tell the difference. I'm like, yes, you can. And anyway, I looked into this and I had a doctor sort of say that there was something in terms of the difference between male and female eyes. It sounds ridiculous, but there is something whereby women cannot tell the difference between HD and normal. It sounds like a sweeping general statement, but there is some truth in it.
Can I just say... Also, to go back just a little bit, why would anybody want to watch EastEnders in HD? Oh, Christ. If there's ever a show that needs a bit of Vaseline smeared on the lens, it's EastEnders. God, no.
That's the quote of the week.
I am going to look that up, though, David. It sounds... I mean, do you know what? Maybe I'll do an experiment later on my wife.
Yeah.
See if she notices.
I can concur that Soph is a bit like that. It wouldn't occur to her that it's not as good as it could be.
I think it's a female deficiency. Yeah.
So anyway, I've got a question for you. If you're going on like a proper journey, what's your, like, got to have that?
I mean, I like all genres. There's nothing that, you know, I would turn my nose up to. I don't believe in that. Oh, that's a cheesy song. You know, if I like a bit of cheese. You know, I'm not a music snob. I can enjoy a boy band as much as a bit of, you know, Schubert or something. So it's essentially just putting on my iPhone or iPod and just hitting shuffle and whatever, you know, come what may.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I, you know, and it's all stuff I put on there, so I know it's going to be bloody awesome. So it's all good, but I just love being in that car driving, listening to music. One of my favorite things ever when I was living in LA for a while, a few years back, and I also had a black Range Rover Sport Supercharged over there. I got another one. And driving down the strip at night with all the, you know, the dirty neon and listening to the Doors, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Just one of the greatest things I've ever done. I used to do it regularly. Just go out at night and just drive down there and listen to, you know, LA Woman, of course, by the Doors. And just magical, absolutely magical.
How long were you in LA for?
About 2 years.
Lush time, I bet.
Oh, fantastic. I mean, that's where I met my wife. So, I met Felicia over there and convinced her to come back to Britain when everything went tits up in the States, which can happen. You know, it's a beast of a town. The thing is, if you're going to go to LA, what I would say, the advice I'd give people is know when to leave, because LA will make it pretty clear to you when your time's up.
So, Steve, you know, the Range Rover Sport watch, she's what, 14 years old, did you say?
2006 is when I bought her. So, yeah, 14 years old with almost 100,000 miles on the clock.
Well, do you know what? She's done well, but she's getting tired now. So with that in mind, what's on the radar as a replacement?
I mean, it's going to sound awful, but I'm such a creature of habit and I love that car so much. I just can't imagine sitting in anything else. So if, God forbid, she conks out, I'm just going to get the same car again and drive that around for another 14 years. I know that's boring, but hey, that's me.
Well, do you know what? If you love it, you love it. And actually, if you're going to buy a car, then, you know, there are two thoughts, aren't there? You swap them out or you run them till they die. And I think running them until they die, if you love them, is probably the best way to do it, I reckon. That's about it for this episode of Fueling Around. So, Dave, as always, thank you, mate. And a big thanks to our special guest this week, the Fablas, Mr. Steve Jones.
Jason, Dave, honestly, that was so much fun. I really enjoyed talking to you. I could have done that all day long. Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you, Steve. It's been a pleasure having you on. And all the very best with the upcoming Formula One season, which will be entertaining as it always is, albeit slightly different this year.
Oh, you said it. It's going to be a bit unusual, but ultimately, as you said, entertaining. And thanks again, guys. Pleasure.
That's about it for this episode of Fueling Around, powered by Adrian Flux. As the UK's largest specialist insurance broker, Adrian Flux will tailor a quote to your exact needs and help save you money on your car, your bike, or your home insurance. Now, don't forget, you can get in touch with us on Twitter at Jason Plato or at David Vitti. And if you've liked what you've heard, then obviously give us one of them star ratings, obviously a big one. Press the subscribe button or share the podcast on all your socials. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.